Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome to the Deep Dive. I'm your host, guiding you through today's exploration.
And I'm here alongside you, ready to delve into the complexities.
Today, we're tackling a huge topic, looking at Karen Armstrong's incredible book, A History of God, The 4,000-Year Quest of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
And it really matters today, doesn't it? Understanding the history of these ideas can shed so much light on, well, current events and interfaith relations.
Absolutely. So our mission here is to give you a shortcut, a nuanced perspective on how the idea of God has evolved, drawing insights directly from summaries of Armstrong's work. Think of it as tools for understanding.
And Karen Armstrong herself, what a fascinating guide for this journey.
Right. Her background is just so unique. She spent 7 years as a Roman Catholic nun, then left that life. But instead of, you know, turning away completely, she dove into rigorous academic study at Oxford.
Yeah, and became this incredibly respected global voice on comparative religion.
It's that blend, isn't it? The insider-outsider thing.
Exactly. She has the empathy, the understanding from being deeply religious, you know, that lived experience. But then she also has the critical distance of an academic who stepped back and analyzed it all.
That combination feels pretty rare.
It really is. It allows her to translate these really complex theological ideas for people like us, for a general audience. And you always feel her commitment to, well, to fostering understanding between faiths. It's kind of her life's work, it seems.
Okay, so let's get into the core argument. Because it is, frankly, revolutionary.
It really is.
Armstrong basically says, look, the concept of God, it's not this fixed, static thing handed down once.
Right. Not unchanging.
No. Instead, she argues it's a dynamic human construct, an idea that's evolved dramatically over, what, 4,000 years?
Four millennia, yeah. Constantly being reshaped by our cultures, our needs, our intellects.
It definitely challenges the conventional view of an eternal, immutable being, doesn't it?
It does. And it's crucial to get what she's not saying here. She isn't trying to prove or disprove God's existence.
Okay, that's an important distinction.
Yeah. Her focus is on how we humans have conceived of, related to, and experienced the divine. How those ways are deeply tangled up with history, society, psychology.
So when she calls God maybe humanity's greatest creation.
It's in that sense, right, that our understanding is something we actively build and adapt. It's not just passively received. Which, you know, immediately brings up the big question. If our ideas about God have changed so much, what does that tell us about Judaism, Christianity, and Islam? About faith itself?
And like you said earlier, understanding this flow, this evolution, it feels essential for today, for dealing with religious conflicts that often come from really rigid ideas.
Absolutely. Seeing the history, the changes, it can lead to a more mature way of thinking about faith, maybe a more peaceful one, too.
So let's start that journey. 4,000 years. It's ambitious. We're looking at how Jews, Christians, and Muslims have thought about the divine through different ages.
It's quite the expedition. And Armstrong shows how these concepts serve different needs, right? Sometimes God is the powerful ruler.
Yeah, the king on the throne.
Other times, maybe God is more like an intimate friend, a companion.
Or even just an abstract principle, like in philosophy.
Exactly. And that adaptability, that constant reshaping, depending on the time and the people, that's key to why these ideas have lasted.
Okay, beginning of the line. Early Hebrew concept of Yahweh, Armstrong points out, this wasn't initially the universal God we might think of.
No, not at all. More like a tribal deity, right? Fierce, maybe a bit partial, definitely provincial.
A god among other gods, basically. Reflecting what scholars call henotheism.
Precisely. Henotheism, acknowledging other gods exist, but your group worships only one. Very different from later monotheism.
But then things change dramatically. Crises like the Babylonian exile.
Yeah.
That must have shaken everything.
Oh, profoundly. Imagine being conquered, exiled, losing your temple. People started asking huge questions.
And the prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, they offered new insights.
Revolutionary insights. They pushed the understanding of Yahweh from just our tribal protector to the one and only God, the creator of everything.
Wow.
A God concerned with universal things, justice, compassion, morality, not just the fate of one small nation. Armstrong really marks this as the birth of true monotheism.
That's a massive shift in thinking.
Huge. And it shows how historical events can totally reshape theology.
So moving forward, another big encounter happens. Jewish thought bumps into Greek philosophy. Plato, Aristotle.
Yeah, this is fascinating. You've got the personal God of the Bible, the one who walks in the garden, speaks to prophet.
Very interactive.
And then you have the Greek philosophers talking about this abstract prime mover, this impersonal first cause. How do you even begin to reconcile those?
It feels like oil and water.
It created a real tension. And figures like Philo of Alexandria, who was a Jewish philosopher living in Egypt, and later many Christian and Islamic thinkers, they really grappled with this. They tried to synthesize, to blend biblical revelation with Greek rationalism.
Leading to more abstract ideas about God.
Increasingly abstract, yeah. Armstrong uses this really helpful framework here. Mythos versus logos.
Ah, yes. Explain that.
So mythos is about meaning, stories, intuition. It tells you why things are, how to live. Think parables, rituals.
Okay, meaning making.
And logos is about logic, reason, science. It tells you how things work, the facts of the world.
Got it.
These philosophers were trying to find a logos, a rational framework for the mythos, the lived faith and stories they inherited.
That makes sense. So from this shared background, the paths diverge. Christianity develops the Trinity.
Right. And Armstrong's insight here is not to see it as like a math problem, three is one.
Which is how it sometimes gets presented, isn't it?
Totally. But she frames it as a new mythos. Yeah. A powerful, symbolic way for early Christians to make sense of their experience of Jesus. How could this man be divine, yet God remain one? And what about the Holy Spirit?
So it's an experiential answer, not just a logical one.
Exactly. It arose from faith, from trying to articulate this profound experience of God in Christ and the Spirit.
Okay, and then Islam emerges in the 7th century.
Hmm.
How does that contrast?
Oh, surely. Islam comes with the absolutely fierce, uncompromising commitment to Tawhid.
Tawhid, the absolute oneness of God.
The absolute oneness, full stop. For Muslims, this was seen as, well, partly a correction to Christian ideas about the Trinity, which they felt compromised God's unity, and partly as a return to the purest form of Abrahamic monotheism. Just God, one God, Allah.
And this God, Allah, is seen as both totally transcendent.
Infinitely beyond our comprehension, yes. But also
incredibly close. Like that famous line from the Quran.
Closer than the jugular vein. Exactly. It's this powerful paradox. Immense distance and yet intimate presence. A very different emphasis.
So we've had tribal gods, philosophical abstractions, Trinitarian concepts, strict to oneness. What comes next? It feels like the intellect has been to a lot of heavy lifting.
And that's where the mystical counter-narrative comes in. You see these powerful movements emerging in all three traditions, almost as a reaction against theology becoming too dry or intellectual.
Okay, like what?
Well, in Judaism, you have the ancient tradition of Kabbalah. In Christianity, figures like Meister Eckhart and the rise of mysticism. And in Islam, Sufism, think of poets like Rumi, thinkers like Al-Ghazali.
And their goal wasn't more intellectual understanding?
Not primarily. They were after direct experience, an intuitive grasp, a feeling, an encounter with the divine, rather than just concepts about the divine.
How did they talk about God then, if it's beyond concepts?
Often using what's called epiphatic language, defining God by what God is not.
Like the cloud of unknowing. That's a famous Christian text, right?
Exactly like that. It emphasizes that ultimate reality, God, is beyond our words, beyond our logic. It's about pointing towards something ineffable, something you experience, not dissect.
A transformative encounter, not just information.
Precisely. It offered a different path, one focused on inner transformation.
Which brings us eventually to the modern era. And wow, talk about challenges. The scientific revolution, the Enlightenment.
Huge shifts. You have thinkers like Voltaire, Kant, championing reason above all else.
And then later, Nietzsche proclaiming the death of God.
Right. That famous, often misunderstood phrase. And Freud seeing religion as, well, a kind of wish fulfillment, an illusion.
How did traditional ideas of God hold up against all that?
It was a profound challenge, no doubt. But Armstrong doesn't see it as the end of the story. More like the latest chapter in this ongoing human quest.
Okay.
She even points out that fundamentalist movements in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are often very modern phenomena. They're reacting against secularism, trying to reclaim certainty in a changing world.
That's a really interesting point, a modern reaction.
It is, and it raises that question again. Even with science explaining so much, why do people still seem to need transcendence? Meaning purpose.
Yeah, that need doesn't seem to go away.
Armstrong suggests it doesn't. And so the idea of God, it'll likely keep evolving. We'll keep finding new ways to think about it, experience it. The quest isn't over.
Okay, so after this incredible journey through 4,000 years, let's distill some key takeaways. What does all this mean for you listening right now?
I think the first big one, for me, is that the evolution of God concepts is a strength, not a weakness.
Say more about that.
Well, Armstrong shows these ideas have always been fluid. They've adapted to new knowledge, new circumstances. Realizing that can be quite liberating, you know?
How so?
It frees you from feeling locked into one rigid, unchanging definition. It allows for personal growth, spiritual adaptation, without necessarily throwing everything out. It shows human spiritual creativity, really.
That makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
What's another key message?
Definitely the deep interconnectedness of the Abrahamic faiths.
Despite all the conflicts and apparent differences.
Yes. Armstrong highlights the shared roots, the constant borrowing and influencing, the parallel ways they tackled similar theological puzzles. Seeing that history, it's just vital for building empathy today.
Understanding the shared heritage to foster dialogue.
Exactly. In a world that feels increasingly fractured, that perspective is crucial.
Okay, one more.
I'd say it's about looking beyond literalism to the power of symbolic and experiential faith.
Moving past reading religious texts like science manuals.
Pretty much, yeah. Religious language often works differently. It uses symbols, metaphors, stories to evoke meaning, to point towards an experience, not just state facts.
Like the mystics we talked about.
Precisely. Embracing that symbolic, experiential side allows faith to coexist with science. It offers meaning and connection in ways that purely empirical data can't. It taps into a different kind of truth.
Okay, this has been fascinating. Before we wrap up, here's something to really chew on, a provocative thought based on everything we've discussed.
Yeah, building on Armstrong's core idea. If our concept of God has constantly evolved for 4,000 years, reflecting our deepest needs, our growing knowledge, our search for meaning, then what new forms, what new understandings, what new experiences of the divine might we be shaping right now, today, for the future?
Wow. How is our collective consciousness, our current moment, continuing to redefine this incredibly powerful idea? What will God look like, conceptually, in another 100 years? Or another 1,000?
It's a huge question to ponder.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.